Hello, welcome back. Another week, Knuckle Push-Ups. My name is Patrick O'Connor. I am an NBA fan, and I am joined, as I am every week, by my friend, longtime friend, and tag team partner here, Sean Silver. It's been a rough week for anyone who is an NBA fan or even just has ever seen basketball before. I think everyone kind of felt the paradigm shift where basketball, sports, and the world lost a true influential figure in Kobe Bryant. It's been a long week, and I am really glad to be here working through it with you, my man.
Hey, thanks. We do this podcast to have some fun, to spend some time together, to talk about a game that we love. Obviously, Kobe Bryant was a major part of that game. The most appropriate way to kind of bounce back from this as basketball fans is to kind of look at, you know, what Kobe in his 20 years as an NBA player brought about. Think back to our childhoods, our adolescence, our teenage years as NBA fans, right as Kobe was coming into the league, what that league was like, and how his influence led to what we're seeing today. MJ has the mantle as the guy all time, but what Kobe Bryant did, you know, his accomplishments and his stature as a superstar, all those things had a huge influence on where we are in 2020.
Kobe Bryant was, it's really hard to kind of sum up. I mean, we talk about basketball every week, and we've kind of, one of the subtitles of this show is a love letter to basketball. That's really kind of where I think it falls today. I mean, there's parts of basketball that we both love. There's parts that we hate. There's parts that we're confused by. But the one thing that seemed like a steadying force in all of that was Kobe Bryant. And, you know, he came into the NBA in 96. It was, I mean, that was a, you know, a kind of a pivotal time for both of us, just where we were in our lives. He's not that much older than we are, which is nuts to think about. You know, considering like there's very few people that have been in my life in such a clear way, you know, since I was in eighth grade, a freshman in high school, like that era. I mean, that's, and I think what's the thing about Kobe is that he entered the league so differently than everyone else in such a more profound way. And it wasn't anything that he did on the court. I mean, he came off the bench for his first couple of years, like most rookies do. It just seemed like he was always there. You know, I think I've discussed this theory with you before. For lack of a sexier term right now, it's a benchmark, right? I mean, for me, the benchmark, there's one in every single area of your fandom. The clearest example for me is The Clash, right? Yes, they're my favorite band ever. The first time I heard The Clash play, I had never heard anything like it before, and anything I listened to after was immediately compared to that. So they were like the high, like not necessarily the high bar that you had to clear, but in order to even be considered, it was just the benchmark that you measured everything else against. Good, bad, or indifferent, it was the first thing. And there's a documentary, the lead singer of The Clash is this guy, Joe Strummer, and there's a documentary about Joe Strummer called The Future is Unwritten. And that's really kind of how I felt about Kobe Bryant entering this phase of his life. Basketball, he just kind of felt like he fit in there, like he'd always been there. But things Kobe was doing, you'd never seen anything really like it before for a kid that age, how he handled the pressure of every moment he was in. And everyone got compared to Kobe coming in to the NBA after that. And everyone who's in the NBA now grew up watching Kobe. So he was kind of that benchmark that everyone was measuring themselves against. Good, bad, or indifferent. But for Kobe Bryant, the man, the future truly was unwritten. I was really excited for the next 40 years of watching what this guy was going to be able to do. You know, he won an Oscar like last year. He won an Oscar, Sean. I really think that no matter what he would have done, it would have been interesting and it would have been just raising the bar on pretty much anything. A lot of guys want to start their own content companies. They want, a piece of podcast, they want a piece of documentaries, they want a piece of reality of whatever. I really think the guy that would have been successful at it no matter what probably would have been Kobe.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think, applying that Mamba mentality to pretty much anything, it would have been successful. It needs not the kind of guy who wasn't backdrafting off just being famous from basketball. I think he would have been successful no matter what, whether he played hoops or not.
You look at the current generation of NBA players, and a lot of them fancy themselves businessmen. That's a term that players throw around, and I don't think they're being light about it. I think they're aware of what the possibilities are, and if they can leverage their brand in certain ways, you know, they can make inroads into other industries. But Kobe Bryant, Kobe's always going to be compared to Jordan, but I think the transition to retirement for Kobe, like with Jordan, here's a guy who had to unretire twice. Here's a guy who never really seemed like he could leave the podium, you know, lead the floor, even to the point where his Basketball Hall of Fame speech, something unfortunately that we're not going to get to see Kobe Bryant make. But Jordan just, you know, took the time to roast everybody and say, you know, you guys aren't as good as me. He couldn't close the yearbook, so to speak. But yeah. Kobe Bryant had made a savvy transition to that phase of his life. And it's interesting because his NBA career was all about this lengthy transition. And some of it was by necessity, and some of it was being a savvy steward of his own brand. But if you remember when he came in 96, he had a $40, $50 million shoe deal from Adidas before he ever hit the floor. You know, he was in a Moesha episode. They tried to make him a shiny suit rapper. He was a backpack rapper with his crew growing up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They signed, I think it was Sony signed them, and eventually it was just like, well, to heck with the other guys. We're going to put Kobe on this single with Tyra Banks singing the hook and see if it works. It didn't, but yeah. He was the smiling face of, I believe he had a Sprite endorsement.
Yep.
They basically gave him the 1997 All-Star Slam Dunk contest, gave him the win, and just was like, hey, we're going to put you up against Chris Carr, Darvin Ham, who I think was robbed, frankly, and a bunch of finesse dunkers. Just, Kobe, go out there and throw the ball between your legs, and you're going to win the contest. Like, the NBA was hard behind this guy. A bunch of brands were hard behind this guy, and his whole role was to be that smiling face, take over from the be-like Mike Jordan that we'd yep. had. He got on this platform, and then it all came tumbling down. And, you know, without going too far down into the reasons why, he managed to shift. He managed to change the entire narrative around him as a player and as a person, and did it multiple times. And it was very impressive. And maybe don't go and pick up a sexual assault charge, today's NBA player. Maybe that's a good idea for you to stay away from something like that. But the idea of being able to rebuild your, you know, kind of rebuild on the fly, all these things can make this generation of basketball players more well-rounded than, you know, that generation in the 90s that Kobe came into.
I think the thing with Kobe was him coming into the league, he was always very driven to be like, I'm going to surpass Michael Jordan. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to work at every single day. That's my sole purpose. That's what I'm going to do. All the brands that kind of jumped on the Kobe bandwagon, they were thinking, well, we're going to pass the torch to you. Like, we don't want to wait to build up another Jordan. We're just going to put the mantle on you and let you run with it. The NBA loves to do that. The NBA loves, like, anointing whoever the next guy is.
Yep.
Because it's
still happens everything now.
Oh, totally. And it will forever because business continues and it doesn't matter who, but someone's a superstar, the next X, right? Kobe, I think, is the kind of guy, and that part of his personality kind of emerged. I think it was always there, but it emerged over time where it was, that's great. Hey, you want me to be the next Michael Jordan, but I'm here to kill Michael Jordan. I'm the first Kobe Bryant, was kind of what eventually, like, that's kind of the way I'll always think of Kobe, is that it took a little while for him to, like, change from Kobe Bryant into the Black Mamba. But once he became the Mamba, like, that was it. That was the real Kobe. It wasn't always that way. Probably was for the last maybe 8 years of his career.
Yep.
that he had kind of like hit that apex, and that was just the combination of mindset and work ethic and history and being able to do it and kind of holding this mantle of, you're going to have to take this from me. That's the thing that I think that the NBA is missing now. It was that ability to be so emphatically himself that the NBA is sorely lacking and will continue to lack. And that's not something you can manufacture. And I think that's kind of what I certainly respected about Kobe more than anything. I would never call myself a Laker fan, but being a Kobe Bryant appreciator is like at the center of NBA theism, you know, of just being like, I can watch this guy play and I can think about what he's doing, and it doesn't really matter the name on the front of the jersey or the colors, because that's Picasso out there. I don't care who his patrons are, but when he's done, I'm going to see something I've never seen before. And I don't know how he created it. I don't know how he saw it, but it was like watching an alien come down from outer space and just evolve the game on the fly. And that's, someone else will eventually do that. I don't know who it is. And it's going to be fascinating to watch, but
it may already be happening with some players right now. I mean, we don't really know whether we've scratched the surface of the next generation of NBA superstars, because, you know, the league's kind of in a transitional time here. You've got LeBron's going to be hanging it up soon. I mean, I feel like, there's, you got Giannis, Kevin Durant's still kind of hanging on, Curry is still kind of hanging on, guys like that. But, you know, the next generation, you think about the position that David Stern was in 1996 when Kobe was a rookie. Magic Johnson was ripped away before he was done. I think he was 31 years old or thereabouts when he had to retire. And he unretired and became a coach and a variety of things. But
the Magic, talk show host.
Yes, the Magic Hour.
Movie theater owner.
Indeed.
But Starbucks partner.
He was ripped away, definitely relatively early. He probably had several more years left in the tank. Larry Bird, although he retired, when he was 35, 36 years old, the last several years of his career weren't really maybe what David Stern had wanted. And Jordan, Jordan had to retire. He was almost ripped away too early. Then he gave himself a little more formal of a send-off, and then, of course, had to ruin that and go out there again. But, he's the Sugar Ray Leonard of the NBA, that Michael Jordan. Think about it from David Stern's perspective. I was looking at a photo of, remember when they did the 50 greatest NBA players back on the 50th anniversary of the league? And they had it tiered, right? So all the point guards were in the front. Second row was the two guards. Third row was the small forwards. Fourth row was the power forwards. The guys in the back were the centers. And who was there right in the middle of the picture? Three guys, not in the order of all the other guys in the rest of the picture. It was Jordan, Magic, and Bird right in the middle of the picture. Just like, here are the three biggest personalities in the history of the
sport. Tip of the spear.
Right? Yep. And Stern lost them all. So it makes sense that Kobe was foisted upon us in the manner that he was. And it's even more a credit to him that he went out and was just who was going to succeed Jordan? We were told that, Harold Miner was this great dunker. He was baby Jordan, right? And Jerry Stackhouse was this UNC guy. So he was the next Jordan. And then Grant
Vince
Hill.
Sanity.
Yeah, Grant.
Yeah,
Grant
the
Hill
NBA
the
put
injuries.
A lot of money on. Yeah, put I a mean, lot of money on Grant Hill.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant and Vinsanity.
If Grant Hill had been healthy, who knows what he would have been?
Right.
And I mean, Kobe Bryant was a guy who was unlike anything we'd ever seen. And he managed to do it for 20 years, have that lasting effect despite being like multiple characters. He was like a pro wrestler.
He was Randy Orton.
Yes. Yes, he was a great heel, a compelling baby face at times, but usually, an apex predator, a viper, whatever you want to call him.
Well, I think the thing about Randy Orton, and he's been pretty open about this in conversations later in his career, was always that, like, they try to make him a face because, the kid's cut out of granite and looks like a superhero, but ultimately he's better as a bad guy. When he came into the WWE, it was because like he was had a lot of rage issues, had been court-martialed from the Marines.
Right, yeah.
Like some people, they just don't fit into the box you need them to fit into. But he clicked in a certain way that it came natural to him being the type of performer that he is. And he's refined certain parts of his career over almost 20 years that he's been wrestling now. And that was the thing about Kobe. They put him in this box to be like, this is what we want you to be. You know, he's a two guard. He's camera ready. He's got bravado. He wants to chase Jordan. This is the guy. He took Brandy to the prom before he was drafted. This is the kind of dude we need. That was what the NBA really felt like they needed, because they lost all these guys that had carried the league from tape delays to prime time, you know, and that just wasn't the box that Kobe was supposed to be in. And honestly, what brings the best out of a person sometimes is having to like basically sink or swim. Not every situation is ideal. And the NBA now is a custom-built product to be an ideal situation for everybody, fans and players alike. There's not a whole lot of individuality. It's algorithm-based entertainment. And that won't be the same forever, because we're all looking for Neo here. Someone's going to break the matrix. Someone's just going to, like, they can see the numbers differently and just they'll be able to do something different. And it'll happen. I don't know what it's going to be, but it will happen. And from that, you know, another person will emerge. It won't be Kobe. It won't be a Kobe-like person. What's going to make them the Kobe for their generation is the way they see and approach the game, not by just trying to be a carbon copy of what they've seen before. In the same way that Kobe was not the type of player that Jordan was, but the respect he demanded from his peers, being your favorite basketball player's favorite basketball player, is what they had in common and what he was able to do. When Jordan retired, finally, I mean, let's just call it at the end of the second run with the Bulls, not even talk about the Wizards right now. But
I'm down with that.
What in looking at like who's going to take up the mantle for Jordan, no one has. Essentially, I look at it as you split Michael Jordan in two, and those different halves have found their ways into other players, right? Physically, in the way you approach the game and just the dominance from a physical standpoint, that's LeBron James, right? No one plays the game like LeBron at the level that he does, makes it look so effortless. That's the Jordan aspect of LeBron.
Right.
And also, like, you say Jordan, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. I say LeBron, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Kobe's the same way. But, like, if Jordan and LeBron, if that's the Superman side of it, then the mentality piece of just the ruthlessness that Jordan approached the game at, the way he competed against rivals, competitors, even his own teammates, the media, the mental side of it, that's all Kobe. That's some Lex Luthor shit. All right. And Kobe was the villain that basketball needed. And the thing is that the only other person that came close to doing this was Iverson and I'll butcher the quote, maybe you know it off the top of your head, but this isn't for the 3 million that boo me. This is for the 100,000 that cheer me, mm-hmm. or that type of idea where it's like, Kobe didn't do it. Like, he was like going to go out and do whatever he wanted, and LA loved him for it. And that kind of grew, right? So after all the stuff went down in Colorado, and again, we don't have to rehash it here.
Right.
The LA fans and Laker fans were like, that's our guy. No matter what, we ride or die with Kobe.
The most passionate stands in the NBA were Kobe stands, period.
Oh, yeah.
He was the most polarizing character. So naturally, that's what it was.
And that's what helped morph him. Even when he was demanding a trade to get out of LA, people were like, we're still Kobe fans. We just saw it in Boston. Kyrie manufactured his way out of Boston. Mm-hmm. And that kid got booed off national television. You know what I mean? No one is going to, like, there's very few people who can, like, keep their fans regardless of what team they play for. Yeah. Kobe was the dude to do that. The space that gave him to operate, to go back to being a backpacker, to just letting his weirdness shine through, that's what turned him into the Black Mamba. which is the best villain in the NBA. It even transcended the whole face heel dynamic that you need in entertainment, because he became not a villain, but a rival. He was the rival of the NBA. So whether it was on court, off court, you really had to work to go up against Kobe, because it wasn't like, you know, you might beat me here, but I'll get you on the next one, like a classic hero villain dynamic. It was just like, you're going to have to take your game to the next level and mentally have to be able to like do some chess while you're doing it in order to compete. It gets the best out of, if you have a rival, it gets the best performance out of you every time. If you just have an arch villain, then it's just like, hey man, you win some, I win some, but we're looking forward to the next match. If you got one in over Kobe, you were a different player after that.
Yeah, it really made you think of, you know, the great rivalries in NBA history. I mean, the easy one to go to would be like Magic Bird, right?
Right.
And the Lakers winning 5 championships in the 80s, the Celtics winning 3. Not all of those in head-to-head action there, but you know, that was the kind of era, like Boston, LA, that was fierce. And then, you know, the Bad Boy Pistons come about. The 88 finals, you know, Magic and Isaiah Thomas meet at half court and kiss each other on the cheek. And that was like the first example of, for anybody, of like these two players from separate teams are actually friends. And we've seen in the 30 plus years since then, the NBA morph kind of out of necessity. I mean, it's kind of been like a league mandate in a way, or maybe a players association mandate, or in concert, where it's kind of like, hey, like everybody here, you can collect them all, you know, get all the ice cream bars that you want, kids. But that's kind of where we are now in 2020. And Kobe just, I mean, even when he was on the Olympic team, right, in China, and they went and won that gold in 2008, kind of righted a wrong from several years before. I mean, there was definitely like a kinship, and, you know, Melo was having a great time playing the best basketball of his life. And
Captain America.
Right?
But, that was Melo's Captain America year.
But that was like the weirdest thing, because it was just like, here's all these dudes from a certain generation, and then the grizzled veteran of that group was Kobe, who just did not fit that team at all, and yet he was amazing.
I think like the thing I don't really see that in anybody. All the guys that emulate Kobe now, I mean, God bless. I mean, Jason Tatum loves Kobe.
Yep.
That was like his favorite player growing up, and I think that's great, but I don't see him emulating Kobe Bryant at all.
Could you? We've talked about this kind of off the air, Patrick. The more that I see of Jason Tatum, I can almost see like the potential for like a Jason Tatum heel turn.
Okay.
And like him becoming like a next generation like NBA villain. He's got this tremendous amount of skill. He came in with a lot of hype. You know, rookie year, gets the conference finals, dunks on LeBron, bumps him in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that year three now, he's feeling himself. He's taken over a leadership role for a Celtics team that's, you know, maybe cruising toward the finals. I could see Jason Tatum maybe comfortably settling into, or maybe doing his best impression of, a 2020s version of the Mamba. Do you see that, or do you think this kid's just way too tepid to be that?
I don't think he's too tepid, but I think there's other better player comps. I think he could be like a Paul Pierce type and get there faster than Paul Pierce did.
Okay.
Like, I think he just has a much different – the guy – I think it's all mentality with Kobe. I mean, he might have the talent that Kobe had. He could emulate some of the moves, but so that's like back to the physicality, mental capacity version that I was talking about before, where it was like you had the Jordan split. Mentality went to Kobe. Physicality went to – LeBron.
Right.
So I think you could have a guy like Jason Tatum pick up a lot of things to mirror his game. But the guy who I think has the mentality is Jaylen Brown.
Interesting.
I mean, just look at Jaylen Brown's face when he's playing basketball and look at Kobe's face when he was playing basketball. Like, it's just this idea of like, no matter what you do now, I have a chess move built out for exactly what's going to happen next. And I think that like – For what Kobe lacked in God-given talent, he outworked everybody else. Like, who was the assistant coach on the Lakers that after Jerry West saw him work out, he was like, he's better than most of the guys we have now. He was an assistant coach. He was like 40. He was an assistant coach on the Lakers.
And oh, Michael Cooper. Kobe,
Michael Cooper.
Michael Cooper, yeah.
Kobe almost put him in a box, like in his pre-draft workout.
Oh, yeah. He was scrimmaging Michael Cooper and I think Larry Drew, who was a pretty good, darn good two guard for a lot of years in the league. Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't see that. I mean, Jason Tatum has all the natural ability in the world, and I'm sure his work ethic is unbelievable. I'm sure anything that could sideline, like a cramp that could sideline Jason Tatum must feel like giving birth, you know, like to a normal person. So don't get me wrong, but just watching Jaylen Brown play basketball and the way he looks on the court, the way you can see his vision developing and how hard he's pushing himself, that's the Mamba mentality that I think is going to help elevate the Celtics going forward. It's and that's the type of influence that I think Kobe's going to have. There's going to be guys that are like, I looked up to Kobe, I did everything, like, you know, I just wanted to be like him. And there's going to be other guys that wind up emulating Kobe through work ethic without even necessarily trying to. And that's the lasting impact of Kobe. And I think it's just a tragedy to think about how truly the best years of his life were what was going to come next. And the most interesting stuff he was going to do was not going to be winning 5 titles with the Lakers. And it's a fucking tragedy. The comparison that I really liked the most earlier this week, and you made it yourself in talking about like when Magic retired because he had HIV. I mean, I can't think of another event or tragic turn of events in basketball ever. That those are the only two things that like you can really feel a paradigm shift.
Summer,
like the earth move under your feet.
Summer of 93, a little bit. Reggie Lewis, although we knew something was up there. I don't think anybody thought that Reggie Lewis was going to die, but there was at least some talk that Reggie Lewis might have to retire.
Right.
And then that came around. And then also the same summer, Drazen Petrovic. That was something you were completely unprepared for. Here's this kid who's taken off as a young star. It was wild. I was looking up this thing online. I wasn't actually looking up anything at all. It was on Twitter. And it was Kobe scored 60 in his last game in his final season. Mm-hmm. Here are the high scoring totals for, you know, everybody else in NBA history, like in their last season. And Larry Bird had the second highest total. He had a 49-point triple double against Drexler at the Blazers in like April of 92 while he was on his way out. But a little bit further down that list was Drazen Petrovic. And he had like a 40-point game or something his last year with the Nets. But his last year with the Nets, he was like 27 years old. And same was Reggie Lewis. I mean, he was also, I think, 27 years old. Those two things were shocking. But all due respect, Petrovic and Reggie Lewis, for all they meant to Croatian basketball, or was he Serbian? Darn it. This is bad.
Eastern Bloc.
Yes, my
Eastern Bloc basketball.
Geography not great. So for everything that he meant to that,
the Euroball,
region of the world, and for everything that Reggie Lewis meant to Celtics fans, you know, Kobe Bryant meant, good or bad, he meant a lot to literally every single consumer of basketball. And it turns out that he meant a lot to every single person who played basketball. And I think there was a Paul Pierce tweet where he goes, you know, there's no the truth without Kobe. And if you remember, Paul Pierce received the nickname the truth from Shaq after the Celtics beat the Lakers in a regular season game back in 01 or 02. And then, of course, Pierce's legacy as potentially, you know, one of the best NBA players on the planet is cemented by beating Kobe in the NBA Finals.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's a really good way to sum up what I meant about Kobe being the rival. And that's that you had to, like, you didn't do anything until you did it against Kobe. And having to do it against Kobe brought that next level out of you.
He's King Koopa. He's Ganon. He's, you know, he's every, who the heck was the bad guy in Metroid? He is every single, you know, video game boss baked into one.
He's Apollo Creed and Clever Lang. He just was unlike anyone else. And I don't think that there'll ever be another one. And the whole thing about, like, he, I don't know, it's just him growing up in Italy and, like, not really having a very traditional background for the type of, like, even, like, now, I mean, like, everyone's coming out of AAU, so even that's not the same as what the type of background that produced all the NBA stars that we're seeing. It's just everything about Kobe was a little bit different because he saw the world differently and he saw basketball differently and he approached the game differently. And those are the things that you had to do. You had to change how you did everything in order to try to get one over on him. And it's that type of approach to hoops that's so appealing. And I think all the stories that have been coming out about him this week have been really heartwarming and heart-wrenching. I saw a really good one about like, you know, him visiting kids in the hospital, like Make-A-Wish type stuff. Like Kobe's, yep. Kobe's his kid's favorite basketball player. Can we get, like, you know, can he sign a basketball or something? And, like, instead of that, Kobe would show up at the hospital and then make an offer to the parents to, like, what's the barrier here? Is it money? I can take care of that, you know? And, like, and never, and telling his PR team, like, do not breathe a word of this to anybody. And, like, that's another big difference where it's like, that's an NBA Cares commercial right there. Everyone's going to hear about it. And, like, yeah. With Kobe, it was just like, it wasn't like that. And I think part of it was that it's, I don't know. I mean, I it would not surprise me at all if it was like, well, that's, I'm not broadcasting that because I just want to be known as a basketball player. I don't want to do any of this. Or where it's like, this is Kobe Bryant, the human, not Black Mamba, the basketball player, you know? And it's just the dichotomy between the two halves of Kobe were really, really interesting. And it was easy to, he was also, because he was so high up on the mountaintop, really easy to take shots at, really easy to make fun of.
Right.
You know, for all of us villagers at the bottom of the mountain.
Uh-huh. Or even, but, you know, a certain 7 foot, 1 inch, 4-time NBA champion when he gets a mic. You know, right. in a certain club in NYC, and
right,
you know, a couple of days after the 2008 NBA Finals. I mean,
had a vasectomy. Now I can't breed him.
Man,
it's just.
But yeah, a cultural benchmark.
Yeah,
Shaq doing that rap. You know, was
Shaq Fu
was kind of a cultural benchmark. But yeah, nowadays that NBA Cares commercial. I mean, everybody. Now in the NBA, literally everybody is going to take an opportunity like that as a PR piece. Yeah. Literally everybody. And that's, you know, like again, to go back to wrestling, and how can we not on this podcast?
Right.
Like, you know, heels and faces not traveling together in the same car. Oh, Iron Sheik and Hacksaw and Jim Duggan want to get high together and then go on a road trip. That's going to ruin everything. When people find out about this, they're going to go bonkers. Kobe Bryant does nice stuff. Yeah.
Right.
We don't necessarily need to talk about that because he's just this ornery, loner basketball player who is coming for your soul next season.
And that's the thing. Like, I think that there's plenty of stuff out there about how, like, you know, Kobe was a prima donna, and Kobe was it's like his battles
all
with Phil Jackson.
Are.
Yeah, all
to a degree. I mean, if you're playing on this level. Your ego is off the charts. You need to have it. You need to have an incredible belief in yourself.
Oh, yeah. I remember I got into it one time with a buddy of mine because he was saying how he's like, I bet Steph Curry, he just strikes me as like the nicest guy. I'm like, I'm sure he's an absolute dickhead. <They're> like, what are you talking about? I'm like, in order for you to be that good at any one thing, you're on such a completely different level. That, like, we'd both be speaking English, but we're not even speaking the same language.
Your psychological, like, profile is very interesting, I'm sure.
I'm sure he probably is a nice guy, but I'm sure his version of being a nice guy would come across as, like, who is this alien? Like, I don't even think, I can't imagine what it must be like.
And you know what?
So,
He probably thinks that you and me, you know, two people, I think, who are generally regarded as nice guys by the vast majority of people we know, he might be like, yeah, these guys are dicks. These guys are clowns. Because there's just no way we can relate. There's just no way we can relate.
That's what it is. I mean, I think Ray Allen one time, another guy I worked with, Ray Allen used to go get shots up at, like, the BSC every once in a while. and the guy, a couple guys I worked with, go play basketball at lunch. And one time he was there and they were like, Ray, do you want to shoot with us or something like this? And he's like, and just kind of like eyeballing him to be like, well, like, you know, like, do any of you guys play dirty or whatever? Just thinking, cause he's not thinking like, well, you know, I don't want to play against like these plebs, these fucking like, you know, low lives out here, like playing basketball at lunch.
Like Isaiah Thomas thinking, like, over at Emerson College.
Yeah. He's thinking like, if I turn an ankle, cause one of these guys sets a pick incorrectly, I'm not going to be able to go through my routine, which is going to throw off my day, which will throw off my week, which could throw off my schedule, my rhythm, all this and that. Creatures of habit, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's, and I'm sure it's like with Steph Curry, he might be like, again, nicest guy in the world, but like can't take the risk to like mess up my gait. You know, it's just a completely different ballgame. And I think the difference between Kobe and every other NBA player is Kobe wore that on his sleeve. You know what I mean? He wasn't like concerned with, well, I have to play nice for this reason. He's like, no, it just, it didn't resonate. Like Bill Simmons was telling a story about how after he wrote a story about Bill Russell and leadership, Kobe Bryant had reached out to him just to talk about, wanted to talk about the story that he just read, the piece he just read.
Yeah.
And they were talking about it. And a couple months later, just about what leadership means and all this. And a couple months later, Simmons was thinking about it and wanted to include that conversation he had with Kobe in another piece he was working on and reached out to Kobe to see if he could use it. And Kobe was like, no, that's completely off the record. You'll never talk about that again. You know what I mean? Just like, yeah. I don't want to give up any type of edge to anybody else. Like, I'm sure Kobe was thinking like, if anyone knew that I reached out to you to talk about this, either other people are going to reach out to you, Bill Simmons, to talk about leadership, or they're going to know I was curious about it and they're going to have some sort of edge over me. And it's just like, it's just that different type of mentality that was used against the Celtics so many times that I really, which, you know, kind of put Kobe in a villainous type of light for me as an NBA fan. But what I would have loved to have seen evolve and be applied to so many other things in the future. And maybe like the Mamba would have softened after a while and the Fangs would have gotten a little more dull, or maybe it would have amped up even more as like, you know, as Gigi got into the WNBA or playing at UConn like she dreamed about doing or whatever. It just, the different levels of Kobe. Kobe is a guy that I'm positive would have kept evolving, and naming himself Black Mamba after a snake is really interesting because snakes have to shed their skin and evolve. Yeah. And it would have been really good to see him do that. And it's a tragic shame that we're not going to.
The last good rival. Is it just me? We had four consecutive NBA finals between LeBron and the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, Cleveland, even swung it and won the whole damn thing. And, you know, you had the sense of jubilation around the fact that Cleveland hadn't won a major sports title since the 1950s. Like, the Celtics and Lakers only met in the finals twice, you know, during Kobe's time as a player, yet they were both kind of classic series, classic matchups. Yeah. I feel like there was just more heat to those two finals matchups than getting double the matchups between Golden State and Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of history and between the Celtics and the Lakers. And Kobe was a guy that I think took that stewardship of basketball really seriously. And I don't get the sense that LeBron or the Warriors did. You know? In the same way.
LeBron
is a brand himself.
Yes, and his brand, and I guess, at the time was, you know, I'm from here, sort of. Yeah. I'm a kid from Akron.
Kid from Akron.
You know, registered trademark.
Yeah, exactly.
It is the next stage for me to come back here
for me.
And win a championship for Cleveland.
Jimmy Chitwood.
It wasn't something where he hung in there after. If he was Kobe, he would have toiled. He would have hung around from 2010 to 2014 in Cleveland. But LeBron, his success has, frankly, come out of a lot of convenience. And it goes with that physical dominance that he has been in the right time and place for him to exploit his talents to a level that's got him, what, 3 NBA championships and appearances, and I don't know, what are we at now, 8 NBA finals?
Sure. He's amazing. Yeah. He's Superman. You want to know who the most boring superhero is? Superman.
Superman. He's also my favorite. You
know who are you a big comic book guy still?
I'd never been a big comic book guy. That's partially why Superman. Exactly.
Your favorite.
Yes, because he's easy. Right. He's easy to digest.
Totally, man.
You know, he's totally palatable for my. I can't get into
truth,
all these arcs
justice,
and all this different stuff.
Right. Just truth, justice, and the American way.
Give me the demandments, brother.
I love it. Yeah, that's right. But the Kobe was a lot more like Batman, and there's this Justice League arc. It's really a Batman story, but it's called the Tower of Babel. And the broad strokes of it is essentially that it comes out that Batman has files on every single other member of the Justice League on how to take them down in case anything ever happened and they turn bad. Like, he would know how to defeat them. These are people on his team, right? So he had files on the Green Lantern, files on Wonder Woman, files on Superman. How am I going to take these guys down if I have to? And the whole thing is like, those secrets got out. So now they're all in deep shit. But that was Kobe, man. I mean, Kobe, I think, was cataloging everyone to be like, if anything ever goes down, I'm going to know how to beat you. The fact that he was wearing the purple and gold was also manufactured. He manufactured his way to LA. He knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to play there. And that's great. And they loved him for it and everything. But like, him being the steward of that rivalry of those colors, that meant something to Kobe. And I think that it was way different than, like, he wasn't necessarily just representing himself. He was on the Lakers now, but the Lakers were part of him as well. Like, he was the one pushing that forward. And the Celtics-Lakers rivalry is the best one in sports. Like, I don't care. Like, that's the number one rivalry in sports, in my opinion. And I think it really meant something to Kobe that he was the champion for that city and for that franchise and all the history that came with it. And the Celtics are kind of the polar opposite, where you have different versions of the Big Three or whatever, but it does it. But the Celtics, it's never been about what one person is holding all the banners together. It's just the weight of history.
Leprechauns,
if you're going up against one of us, yeah, you're going against all of us.
Yep.
And there's a big difference between being one of many, or just every or all of them. You know, me become we on the Celtics.
Well, that's the Celtics this year too. I mean,
yeah.
And whether it, who knows if it's your pick, Jaylen Brown, is he going to develop the Mamba mentality? Is it my pick, Jason Tatum? I do feel like the Celtics need not necessarily a Kobe. That's incredibly difficult to replicate and probably a fool's errand. But the Celtics need someone to take the reins.
Yeah, they do.
And I don't think it makes the most sense for it to be Kemba Walker. I think the Kemba Walker's role is best as like that steady guy who shows up every night, breaks glass. Yeah. Yeah.
Tully Blanchard.
Exactly. And, break glass in case of kind of player.
Right.
Like, okay, we know that this guy has the ability to come through for us if we really, really, really need him. But it would better behoove us to have one of our young superstars take that mantle. Who's going to take the weight? It's Jaylen. It's Jason. It's freshly minted all-star Jason Tatum.
And I think that's why you're going to see – that's why I'm putting my vote behind Jaylen Brown. Because he didn't get into the All-Star team. And I think he's going to be like, I'm going to make you eat that.
I like it.
Yeah.
As long as somebody's doing it, because that is, to me, short of a trade for a dominant guy in the middle, which I don't see how you're able to make that, I think that's the ticket for the Celtics out of the Eastern Conference. They need to double down on their model that they currently have here, the we instead of me model, with dominant play from one or two guys who really ascend to, next level status.
Yeah.
And they get by teams that are bigger. They get by teams that are more physical just on, a great model and an overwhelming amount of talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who is going to be the, like, I don't think that, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a trade because it's Danny Ainge. I just don't know who it would be.
Yeah, right now the options that are out there aren't appealing to me.
Exactly.
Andre Drummond, Kevin Love, you know, Clint Capella, Steven Adams, Tristan Thompson. I mean, they're all fine players in different ways. They're all flawed players. So
the guy you want is Sabonis, and the Pacers aren't giving him up.
Oh, my God. I love Sabonis so much.
Or Bam Adebayo, and the Heat aren't giving up Bam.
I was thinking about, oh, man, Bam is another one that I'm, like, crushing.
You could probably get Mo Bamba if you wanted him, but I don't want Mo Bamba.
Oh, my God.
Or DeAndre
gosh.
Ayton. You could probably take a flyer at DeAndre.
DeAndre and Booker, they've been playing pretty well together of late.
But that's not even the big man on the Suns that I'm interested in. Give me back Aaron Baines.
He'd be a great fit, man. He'd
trade you Vincent Poirier fit. And Carson Edwards.
Vinny Sexfinger. Oh, yeah. Man. But yeah,
Vinny Sexfinger.
All this is interesting, though. Like, think about the amount of work that went into having basketball crushes back in 1996.
Right.
And I had guys like, I liked Horace Grant because he had goggles. I liked Sean Kemp and Sean Elliott because they were named Sean, you know, like I had a thing for Dino Raja and Antoine Walker and Marcus Camby because they were all Massachusetts related, you know, basketball players in some way, whether they represented my hometown team or they went to UMass and they were now in the NBA. Like, these were the guys. It took a whole lot of work to, like, follow their exploits. Now we're in a league that, you know, thanks to, I mean, League Pass came into effect in the early part of the century. And now it's not just League Pass. It's all this stuff is on Twitter. Like, Twitter is telling you, the official NBA account, the Bleacher Report account, which is affiliated with what Turner and in bed with the NBA, they are telling you who the guys are that matter out there, like night to night. And it's crazy just how much differently that's presented now, how easy it is to have a basketball crush.
Yeah. It's harder to be a fan now. It really is. I mean, it's never been easier to get into it. It's never been harder to appreciate it. It's not easy.
It's like, you know, here's Trae Young, here's Trae Young, here's Luka, here's Luka. And it's like, just give me a Sabonis highlight, damn it. I want to see a drop step.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, man. I mean, like, I was listening to another really great conversation today about the state of music and how the biggest thing with younger kids now is vinyl.
Yep.
And I think it's because all the cool things about vinyl – like all when we were growing up, I mean, we were the CD generation, man. I mean, tapes and CDs, and those were built for convenience. Like, those type of innovations are built for convenience, not for coolness. The thing that's cool about vinyl was that, like, that's just where the tech was, and you dressed up everything around it so it was, you know, palatable. But it gave you the opportunity to dress it up. So that the album cover became the artwork, and you put a lot of work into that.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself became like a mark of coolness, depending on what your record collection was. What was your taste? Because those things aren't easy to get. They're not easy to find. You have to go to the right record store to get the right records. It was like everything you carried with you was a badge of courage. Now, it's just incredibly easy to get whatever it is you want, whenever you want it, wherever you want. Everything's on demand. It's not cool because it's built for convenience. People who are our age and a little bit older, they built these things out to make it easy for them to experience what they already know they like. Kids now have no idea what they like because they're kids. You know, so like now being able to discover vinyl for them, it's like they have this tactile thing they can hold. And like now the whole thing begins again. It's just not born of necessity. It's because everyone wants that way to kind of piece together their identity by the things they carry with them or the things they can display. Being an NBA fan is no different at all. It's never been easier to follow the sport, but you have no idea what to like and why. It takes time and effort to find it. So while, yeah, you're not getting a ton of Sabonis highlights on Twitter, if you follow the right Twitter accounts, you will.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
It takes time to go out and find it. Takes time to make sure that, like, you know, you're home on a Wednesday to watch the Pacers come in or that you're home, like digging into League Pass to watch, like, you know, Oladipo's return. Being an NBA fan now, like being a true fan, means way more than it did. Even when you and I were coming up, we were talking about this off air, but like in 96, the guys that I followed weren't even on the East Coast. I mean, I just watched like the nationally televised game NBA on NBC, three games in a row every Sunday. You know, so like my favorite players were Barkley, Marley, Kevin Johnson, Sean Kemp, Drexler.
The glove.
Hakeem, the glove. Because they had superstars they'd put up against guys like Jordan. I felt like the Bulls played every week.
Yeah.
Never saw the Celtics on nationally televised games ever because it was post-Bird. So it's just, it was not easy to be, it was easier to be a basketball fan as far as I knew, you know? It's so that's kind of like how it is now, where it's like it's really easy to just watch Trae Young highlights, but who gives a shit? Trae Young and Devin Booker are putting up, they're breaking scoring records on teams that don't matter,
right?
You know, and it's that that's fine if that's what you want to like, but it takes a little digging, and I appreciate the hard work you have to put in to be the type of fan you want to be.
Well, like any cool kid or, you know, someone who wants to be perceived to be cool, I rebel in my NBA fandom. I gravitate towards old school post play. I gravitate towards the mid range, and, you know, give me the highlights from the guys that are just criminally slept on. That's why I'm so high on like Utah and Indiana, because I think there's guys on both of those teams, like star level players with things to offer, but because they're playing in those markets,
right,
we're being conditioned to think that they don't matter,
right?
But you know, they make it, they win a couple playoff series this spring, then we're thinking a lot differently. So
well, yeah, the machine will get behind them to make those teams feel like they have mattered the whole time, and no right. one's going to say anything because the emperor has no clothes on and no one wants to look like an asshole. So I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I've watched, you know, I watch every Nuggets game. I've been a Nuggets fan all season. You know, I mean, it's just how it goes. It's fine. It's all great because everyone's basketball is still, in my opinion, is the only sport. It's the most meaningful sport of the four majors in the U.S. Like it's challenging soccer for the most important game globally, and that's fine. There's plenty of room on this boat. It's you know, everyone pile on.
You know what's wild is how players, like, again, comparing the NBA today to the NBA in 96, but talked about, like, Baby Jordan and how all these different guys were supposed to be the next somebody.
Yeah.
Now, like, you have guys who are the next version of some classic player, and you say that we're way too quick to anoint, but, like, it's a generation of players that we're watching now for whom, like, they're not limited by the same things that players a couple of generations ago were limited right. by. I mean,
exactly.
You talk about Denver and you look at a player like Jokic.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no mold for a player like that.
No.
He's a center who is playing like, I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know what a comp for Jokic is. He's doing stuff that we'd never seen before.
Right.
He's just this hybrid player. And some of that is like, you know, the global expansion of the NBA. Like, think about in the 90s, who had been good European players up through then? Like, you were just getting Arvidas. You'd had Saronis yeah. Marcellonis. You know, like, there wasn't yeah. really, and you...
Dirkus Malinkas.
You didn't have Dirk Nowitzki yet. He was drafted in 98 with Paul Pierce. We hadn't seen, like, what was truly possible yet, and now we have
right.
this whole generation of, like, eager European kids who want to be some classic player who might have been on the NBA and NBC simulcast.
Yeah. Right.
You know, back in their home country 10, 15 years ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're going to find a mixtape of someone. Someone in, like, Slovenia now is going to be watching Paul Pierce mixtapes from Pierce's, yep. like, you know, first 3 years in the NBA.
And maybe that guy's not 6'7", you know, maybe that guy's right. 7'3", or,
right.
you know, maybe he's a, you know, maybe he's a burly point guard. Who knows?
Right. And like that's kind of the cool exactly. And like basketball will continue to evolve. It's I'm sure if there were podcasts in the 1970s, people would be talking about who's the next Cousy. You know, or like it's just
Pete,
how it goes.
Right? Clearly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or it's Walt Clyde Frazier.
And it's that's the cool thing about basketball is like there's so much going on that there's no way you can notice everything all at once. You just find the one thing that you're really good at or that you want to emulate and you build your game around that. Like I remember one of the first things I ever wrote that got any attention on the internet at all was just about like how weird it is to turn certain ages and you look back at certain things about what you wish you put your focus on.
I remember this.
And I can remember being like looking back on it now, I wish that I had kind of like, you know, not listened to any of my coaches and being 5'10 at 14 and being I could either be one of the smaller power forwards on the Cape or I could be the tallest point guard. And they're like, no, you're playing the four. You're a power forward. And I should have just worked on my handle and been the biggest point guard that I would have played for 4 years in high school. You know what I mean? And it's like you just think about different things you could do differently and what you can use to your advantage. And I think that if there's kids out there that are like, you know, I can't shoot the three, but I can pass or I'm going to focus on that. I'll learn how to shoot later. That's what the benefit of like this generation of basketball players has, where you can work on these specific skills and like know that you can model your game after somebody and kind of build it around that as opposed to just learning all fundamentals or trying to do everything the same. It's what a time to be alive, you know, and there'll be in 10 years from now, if whatever we're doing, whatever version of the podcast is that, we'll be talking about some other kid that's doing that.
That's a little creepy because that kid currently is what, like 10 years old?
Yeah, if even. Six, it's my nephew. You know?
Big pressure on that kid.
Big pressure on that
kid. Just put him on blast across multiple podcast mediums.
Well, I gotta shout him out. Like, he went to a basketball camp. He goes to basketball every week. And it was like this, I guess it was like a mixed age group camp last week. And one of the coaches came over to my sister and was like, I'd like to put your son on the third grade team, even though he's like in kindergarten.
Whoa.
Because I can tell that he's listening to his coaches out there and he's working really hard. I'd rather have someone that works hard. I don't really care how old he is. If it's okay with you, I can put him on this team. So yeah, we may be singing his praises in 10 years from now. And wouldn't that be great for all of us? Hopefully you can get me season tickets. Whatever the Massachusetts version of AAU is, I'm sure he'll be in it.
Yeah, sooner rather than later.
So all in all, man, I mean, it's been a real rough one. I mean, last week on the pod, we, you know, and lately over the past couple like times we've done this, we've been really kind of, I wouldn't say struggling with our identity, but just thinking about how what we're going to do is going to help us stand out and the work and effort we're putting in, what's going to be our version of what a basketball podcast can be? What does our love letter to the NBA actually sound like? And I had like, you know, been thinking like, what's the best way to go about this? Do we want to just talk about what's currently happening? Are we talking about analogous worlds of how we're seeing what's playing out in the NBA and how we like that and other versions of the sport or other parts of pop culture? And really just kind of what our stamp on this is. And that kind of got derailed by a tragedy. But from whatever tragedy happens, I mean, the game evolves and the game moves on. And it doesn't mean you have to forget about what came before you. It just means, like, how are you going to take that and let that influence you and grow it into something new and something special? And that's what I want to continue to do. I mean, Kobe Bryant and the influence that Kobe Bryant has had on basketball is immeasurable, and we'll continue to see that ripple throughout time. And I'm excited to kind of ride the wave and kind of think about how we can continue to evolve as well and just try to measure up to that benchmark however is possible.
Mamba mentality, Patrick. This is the Knuckle Push-Ups podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll talk hoops with you again next week. For Patrick O'Connor, I'm Sean Silver. Be well.